I think he really loves his children. I think that's the kind of overwhelming sense I have from being in the prison, is that he really enjoys his children, even the worst behaved. The Lord has shown me over and over again things that he loves about these people, his children.
Welcome to Life with God, a Renovare podcast. A place for unhurried and thoughtful conversations about interactive life with God. I'm Nathan Foster, and today's conversation is with John Paul Weston, an Anglican priest currently serving as a prison chaplain in New Brunswick, Canada. In this current series of podcasts, we're exploring the topic of friendship, and our conversation today highlights the simple goodness of showing up and befriending the forgotten. He started as a parish priest, working with 9 churches and 11 cemeteries in rural Nova Scotia. He spent time in the inner city parish in Montreal, a Lutheran church in Sweden, and 12 years at the most easterly city in North America, St. John's, Newfoundland. After which he came back to New Brunswick, working as an Anglican rector and at the same time, lead pastor of a vineyard church. I love this picture. Sunday morning starting an Anglican service and then on to a vineyard service. And something just seems right about that. His most recent shift to prison chaplaincy came out of a beautiful invitation he received from God. Would you like to come see what I'm up to? We drop into the conversation where I asked John Paul about his work with folks incarcerated. I spoke with John Paul from his home in New Brunswick, Canada. And your work now as a chaplain in the prison, what does that look like?
Well, it's kind of downward mobility. Yeah, I really felt like, when we were thinking about things, there were all sorts of different parts of the decision. Part of it was our health, and I had eye issues and so on, and found I couldn't see what I used to be able to see, and that presented certain challenges. And for me, also an experience of learning to trust God in a different way, to see differently. And so the invitation to enter chaplaincy, it felt like an invitation. It felt more, not like, John Paul, will you come and help us out? Although that was phrased that way by the regional chaplain, which is fine. But I felt like there was another voice, and the Lord's voice was, John Paul, would you like to see what I'm up to? So it felt like that, would you like to see what I'm doing in here? That's what attracted me. And I felt like, actually, Lord, I would really like to see what you're doing in there, because I had glimpses of what he was doing when I was working in prisons elsewhere, and even in the, Protestant chaplaincy there, but I wanted to see more. And I think I was filled with hope that if I could discern more of what he's doing there, I might be able to discern more of what he's doing, in my own life and also in our chaotic world. So.
And what is God up to in the prison?
Well, I think he really loves his children. I think that's the kind of overwhelming sense I have from being in the prison, is that he really enjoys his children, even the worst behaved of them. Mm-hmm. And, I'm a site-based chaplain, which means I wander all over the prison and I'm responsible. The whole prison's my parish, as it were, whether you're atheists or pagans or Muslims, everybody. And so, we are there to help them with their spiritual journey if they're interested, or if they believe they have a spiritual journey or whatever. So we can access everyone and we can go everywhere. And so we say, we see everything. And there's there's just an openness and an honesty that we see. And there's so much humor and there's so much courage shown by these guys in this you know, the simplest ways and in the most limited ways. And I think the Lord has shown me over and over again things that He loves about these people, these children, and you know, the humor. And you know, it's like they lead me somewhere, and I'll have an interaction, and there'll be a twinkle in somebody's eye or a little poking of fun, and you almost feel Jesus's enjoyment of that, and knowing that I enjoy it too, you know. So I think that these are somehow people there, and this includes the staff, because it's, you know, guards and staff are there, and they live in that same environment, and they have a different relation to it, but it's, you know, it's kind of like a family.
Mm.
And the Lord has a lot of people that He considers His friends and His special ones. And I've had a chance to see a lot of them and talk with them and get insights as to why He would find them special.
Hmm. How has the role of friendship played out there?
Well, you know, inside the prison system, chaplains don't have any power. So we have no institutional power. We're not on any committees. Nobody asks our advice on anything really officially, you know, but we're there. We observe and, you know, we go where we're invited. It's always, you know, it's always on the initiative of the inmate or, you know, or the staff. And so one thing that we can do is, well, of course, you can pray. And that's, I think I've experienced a much greater power of prayer being inside, because there's so many things you have no power over, and even people's pasts and, you know, their sentences and where they're going to be going and what they're going to be doing. You have no control over those things at all, but you can pray for people, and then you can be present. And to be present and to be fully present and to be present, not just on your own, but to be present to God and to them and to yourself. So it's like there's a coming together of a trinity there. And any of those not being present means that there's something that's missed. But friendship is something that we can offer just by being present, because, you know, we can't influence their parole. We can't, you know, we're not part of their restoration program or release program or anything like that. But we can be present with them in their struggle and also enjoy the simple pleasures of life that, you know, that they enjoy, like a good joke or, you know. And also, I think in a way, the kind of powerless and empowered friendship that we can offer, I think is central, I believe, to what Jesus offers. I mean, you know, He says, you call Me master, and you're right. And that makes you the followers and the students, but I call you friends. I identify you as friends. And, you know, from your perspective, it's hard to imagine, but I'm naming you I'm naming you as my friends. And I think for so many of the people that I interact with on a daily basis, you know, continuing to show up and do simple things and to be present is a way of showing them what I think is the heart of the gospel, is that, you know, your Heavenly Father loves you, and He delights to give you the kingdom, and He's not going to hold anything back from you, and He can't love you any more than He does. And all of those, you know, those good things that we hear and we believe and, you know, we share with people. But in prison, it's like you kind of feel it in your bones when you say those things, or you just, and they pick them up. Even you don't even have to say anything. People pick that stuff up. I just came from we have a fellowship night once every 6 weeks or so, and it's a band. And, you know, it used to be a mixture of, you know, praise songs and then other stuff. And it's been, it's become mostly very hard rock, but I love hard rock. And so they try to play thoughtful songs, you know, with not too many, you know, swear words in them for my sake, but, you know, they pick a variety of things and they just pour themselves into it, and they're writing their own songs. And the guy who's kind of the lead singer, that he's writing a song, his songs are like, he's a Christian, and he, you know, they're almost all prayers. And one guy was leaving today and he said, you know, JP, we really appreciate coming in here. And he said, yeah, I know, I appreciate it too. He said, no, we really appreciate it. And you let us play this music. He said, that's really important. And I said, no, I agree with that. And I'd love to hear it. And he said, we feel closer to God when we get to play this music and to think we can play this music in the chapel. And I said, yeah, that's pretty good. But we hadn't talked about it, you know, that is what I'm interested in, you know, but he kind of picked it up that if he can play this music in the chapel and the chaplain is okay with it, then maybe God's okay with it too. And then, you know, maybe God likes music and what they're doing can actually be pleasing to God. So it becomes a very spiritual, you know, thing, even though it's like there's, you know, singing, you know, Jelly Roll and, you know, Bob Seger and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier the word empowerment. I wondered if you could explain what you meant with that.
Well, I think for me, you know, the best thing that we can offer them is the good news that people are loved and that they're valued by God and that they're valuable. And I think, you know, what my hope is that our work and our presence might encourage people to be empowered to embrace their own lives. I mean, that's a very hard thing because for most of them, they want to reject their past. That's, you know, the things that they've done that have ruined their lives, that have separated them from their families, from their loved ones, that have wasted years and all those sorts of things. And they want to separate themselves from the person that did that. And that's them. So there's a kind of there's a lot of self-hatred, you know, inside, and you see it in all sorts of ways from, you know, cutting to drug use and to every imaginable thing. But to see people become empowered to try to change their direction and to believe that it's possible for them to change and that they are lovable and that they are loved and that they have a future, all of those things, you know, for them to be able to, it's really, I think, embracing the heart of the gospel that brings life out of death and light out of darkness and all those sorts of things. I remember a Tuesday we had a Bible study and we have a guy there, very bright guy, who, you know, did something terrible. And he went through the reception system where you're kind of sorted and find out where you're going to be placed in the institutions. And he came his first night in our institution. And I would go down, it was in COVID, and I went down and was visiting the cells of the guys who just have arrived from another institution, and they're going to be penitentiary placed. And went around and introduced myself. I give them a candy, tell them who I am, ask them if I could do anything for them, you know, paper, pen, crossword puzzles, Bible, you know, daily devotional, whatever it is. And I chatted with him. He was cordial, left everything. As I went by to the next cell, he said, "Chaplain, can I just ask you a question?" And I came back and he said, "Have you ever seen anybody change?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You have." I said, "Yeah." "Many?" I said, "Yeah." "You've seen a lot of guys in cells change?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Wow, okay, thanks." And this guy, he's trying all sorts of routes to find spirituality. But he was in the Bible study on Tuesday, and we're doing the book of Revelation. And, you know, he's very hesitant about Christianity for all sorts of good reasons. But we were in chapter 19 of the book of Revelation. So we just dealt with the, you know, the Whore of Babylon. And we were into the good guy, the guy in the white stallion who was going to slaughter everybody. And the blood was going to be up to their bridles, you know, the horses. And I was trying to say to them, when you read this stuff, you got to stay focused because it's a vision and it's like a dream. And it's like, if you spend too much time trying to figure out all the details in your dream, you're going to
miss it.
Crazy, right? And I said, so I asked him, you know, I call him Bob. "Bob, can you summarize that chapter in one or two sentences?" And he said, well, heavy metal. I said, yeah, it's heavy metal. It's heavy metal. He said, yeah, the good guy wins. I said, that's right. It's the good guy wins. And that's the message that the persecuted, suffering Christians in the first century needed to hear as they were being slaughtered and as they're being persecuted and hunted down and squashed by the great empire, that, you know, just keep your faith, hang in there. You know, the faithful one sees you. He has not forgotten you. And the victory is certain, and the good guy wins. And like, he got that, and he gets all the humor. He gets all the humor, and he knows all the foibles, and he is firmly on a path to change, and he is changing, and he is this positive force. I'd say, you know, his life has become empowered since going to jail, and he's fallen from a height of, you know, great success in the world to nothingness and to, you know, being a leper in the eyes of the world. And he's on his own two feet now, and he's rebuilding his life, and he's excited about what's in store, because he's seeing all sorts of new things that he's never seen before. And that's just like, that's one guy. And I've seen, you know, guy who's been so hostile, all of a sudden being full of humor, looking out for people, and he's become a runner for another guy who can't walk. So he goes up and down the stairs and brings his tray up for food and takes him around to appointments and things like that. You know, very humble kind of service. And this guy was a very proud guy and angry and bitter, and he's full of humor and life and goodness, and he's not a Christian by any means, and yet somehow he's become a friend. And I think, you know, you can't really become a friend until you've understood that you have been befriended.
Oh, that's a good line. That's a really good line. The role of downward mobility in our spiritual experiences. The gentleman you were talking about experienced it, and then you mentioned it earlier for yourself. What does that give us?
Well, I mean, I can only talk for myself. You know, for me, I've had some health issues just with my sight. I've had 8 different procedures on my sight, and I've lost a lot of my vision. But I still miraculously, you know, have the ability to drive a car. So, you know, if you come to Canada, if you're in the East Coast, stay off the road. But I also, I'm still playing hockey. So, you know, and my, you know, if they were keeping statistics, you'd find that I probably have a much higher scoring percentage since I lost my vision. I'm like Luke Skywalker, you know, I fire the puck and hope the force is with it. You know, I have no idea what's on the other end. So I've found that my relation to simple things like walking and balance and peripheral vision and things, I've have to trust more, and also, but not just, you know, blind trust, but also be much more aware of my surroundings. And that's actually helped me in my chaplaincy work, because, you know, when you walk into a prison, it's a dangerous place, and lots of things can go wrong. So you respect the rules and you don't do anything stupid. You're just aware of where you are. But you also, you can't live in fear. So, you know, that you have to keep, you know, moving past your fears to greet people and to meet people and to talk with people. And I think the downward mobility is really about, by the grace of God, being given access to people that other people in society will never access. I remember reading something by, I think, Brother Andrew. He was being criticized for being friendly with, you know, the head of the PLO, because, you know, Arafat was a terrorist, and he said something like, you know, well, if we can't be friends with the terrorists, who's going to be their friends? I thought there was something wonderful about that. I mean, Jesus is the epitome of downward mobility. You know, he's the Son of God who is not, you know, above being nailed to the tree. He's not above going into the place of separation from God, going into death itself, into the abyss, because that's where we are. We're in that place of separation. And if he doesn't go there, we don't get out. And there's a cost to it, but the rewards obviously are greater than the cost for him, even if it's a total cost. And, you know, I think that as followers of Jesus, if he calls us there, because I don't think he calls everybody to the same place by any means, but he will always call us to places that cost us something to go. But if we go there, I think he will show us something precious that we might not see if we hadn't gone. And so I feel that. The prison I work in has the highest number of sexual offenders in any prison in Canada. You know, I would not have chosen, when I was first going into ordained ministry, to be, you know, working with mostly a congregation of sexual offenders. It's still not something I would choose, but it's somewhere that I've gone because I feel like I've followed Jesus there because he was up to something and he wanted me to be able to see what he's up to and maybe share in that. And it's a hard place to be, and there are hard stories, and there's great pain to share with people if they want to share it with you. But the opportunity to see light and to share light in places of great, great darkness, it's, you know, there's a great privilege to that and a great gift to that as well.
Mm-hmm. John Paul, you strike me as someone who's at ease in life. Is that accurate?
Well, my hockey team is doing very badly right now, so I guess you have to. I want to be comfortable in my life. I think that's been one of the great journeys of my life is to find a way to be able to be at peace with me in relation to God and everything else too. But
how have you done that?
Well, you know, when you're young, you start with plans. And as some of those plans fail, I think accepting failure of some of my plans. I think I'm a kind of a planner guy, and I'm a quite practical too. So I like to follow through on things. And when the plans don't really work the way you want them to, even if you still think they're good plans, and if everybody else got on board, we'd really have something, you know, burning here and something exciting to be part of, to be able to still trust God, that, you know, that God's plans may be even better, and to release the apparent failures. I think that's, for me, that's been one of the keys, is to be able to release my failures, the things that I might have been ashamed of, or I just feel like, what a waste, or, you know, could have been better, or what did I do wrong? Just to release those things and to make myself available to the Lord and trust that he's got something else for me. Mm-hmm. And not to allow those things to, you know, define me. I think that's been part of the journey. And getting older is good too.
I love this picture of how through your life learning to make peace with the plans that didn't come out and the failures, that's essentially what you're helping these friends that are incarcerated to do, right?
Well, I think that's right. I think, and it's a funny thing is, I do find that, I don't know, this is probably the people who have been incarcerated and who have experienced great failures in their life are people I tend to be able to connect with quite quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I have a term that came to mind, and I want to try it, see what you think of it. And I mean it as a positive, but you strike me as like the Mr. Rogers of the prison.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, I like that. I never watched Mr. Rogers growing up. Of course, we had Canadian content, so we had somebody named Mr. Dress-Up who was an artist, okay. And he would do a lot of the same things Mr. Rogers did. But I heard of Mr. Rogers, and then of course I saw the Tom Hanks movie, and I loved Mr. Rogers, and it was so wonderful to hear what a courageous man that man was, and what a deeply Christian man. You know, he was a real follower of Jesus. So that would be lovely if I was a Mr. Rogers. I guess I feel a bit like Mr. Rogers. I'm known as the candy man because I always have a pocket full of candy. And it's, you know, get them at the dollar store. You always have a candy for guys asking for candy. And it's like such a little thing, but they light up every time and they're so grateful. And it's just a way of saying, you know, you're worth having a pocket full of candy to give you candy. And yeah, it is like you befriend people and then you introduce one friend to another friend, even though they may not be friends. They're living in the same unit and they don't talk to one another, but you're both of their friends. And they somehow, you know, sometimes they have to share you and they're a little begrudging in sharing you. It's amazing how often they do. And then, you know, you see this constellation of people sitting together, you know, for example, at a chapel. Today we had this band, I told you, we had a band practice, and we have a bunch of guys who come in just to listen to the music. And the cross-section of people that sit in the back and are just listening to the music, it's remarkable because they would never be seen with one another on the street. But there they are sitting, chatting, just, you know, trivial talk with one another as they're listening to the music in the chapel. And I think it's because the chapel is a place of befriending. And, you know, if you were befriended here, if this is where you feel comfortable, then you are going to have to, you know, welcome whoever else comes in that door. And you don't get to pick who comes in that door. Because everybody who comes in is welcome in here, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's, you know, profoundly Christian, but you don't even have to mention Jesus in that, you know, you just have an open chapel. So mm-hmm. I think that is something Mr. Rogers did. A lot of he introduced people to a lot of his friends, didn't he?
Well, it's seeing value in people and in turn them seeing value in themselves. And yeah, it's good. John Paul, thank you for your time and sharing your insights. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Nate. It's been a pleasure to chat with you and think about these things that are close to my heart. Appreciate it.
And that was John Paul Weston talking about his work as a prison chaplain. I'm Nathan Foster, and you've been listening to Life with God, a Renovare podcast. I'm very grateful for all of you who helped make this work possible. You can join support of Renovare and this podcast with a tax-deductible gift at renovare.org/donate. Renovare is a Christian ecumenical renewal effort offering resources and experiences to help people become more like Jesus. You can find a collection of thoughtfully curated articles, podcast webinars, online classes, as well as information on events and our institute on our website at renovare.org. This podcast is produced by Brian Morricone, who also wrote the opening song titled Be Kind. And until next time, be well, friends. Be well.